Hey friends, today's episode is brought to you by our friends at the Truth Seekers podcast. Truth Seekers Bible Stories for Kids is a podcast for kids and adults of all ages that journey through the stories of the Bible. Y'all know I love my mini BFFs, and including Eddie's two girls. I adore them, and Eddie's a parent. So this kind of stuff really matters to us. The podcast starts at the very beginning of the Bible and will walk through the Old and New Testament in chronological order.
That's neat.
Isn't that cool? I know. The mission of the podcast is to help children see the individual stories of the Bible as part of one bigger story that reveals God's redemptive plan to rescue and restore us back to himself. I think that's so cool.
I was pretty deep into reading the Bible before I realized chronological was an option.
Yeah.
And my first chronological reading was like, whoa. I would love to be able to have that in the brain of a five-year-old instead of a 25-year-old.
Right.
I also love this because, right, all the episodes include narration of the Bible story, application of truth, and kind of like prayer focusing on what we just learned, but also quarantine times. I don't know about all the families, but we are hungry to find church in different ways, ways that keep us in our house that's safe, but also allow us to dive in. So I love this. I love that they're doing it.
I also love that there's like a monthly praying the Bible episode so kids can learn how to pray through the truths of the Bible. I think that's so important.
It's also so cute.
Sorry,
I know that's not the point, but they're little sweethearts. Yep. Keep going.
So the podcast, you guys, can be found on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio. Just look up Truth Seekers Bible Stories for Kids and tell them that Annie and Eddie sent you.
That makes me happy. I can't wait to listen to this.
That's all we needed. Good morning, Eddie. Happy Friday.
Good morning, Annie F. Downs. Happy Friday, my friend. It is good to talk to you.
And to you, Eddie. I am hugely disappointed this morning.
All right. Anything else on the list? Or?
Yeah, I'm just...
I need you to know. Of course, I want to ask. Tell me why you're disappointed.
I woke up and had dreamed that I was real life friends at a dinner table with everyone from New Girl.
I've had some of those dreams and they make me so sad.
Oh gosh, because it's not even possible. They aren't even people, they're characters. But I woke up and I never remember my dreams, Eddie. Never. Unless I feel like the Lord's trying to tell me something, which has happened about three times in my life.
Right.
Other than that, I mean, next to never. And for some reason, I'm remembering I woke up and I knew that I was at Schmidt's house and I knew that Nick Miller and I had been laughing, just laughing our life away. And I can't remember Zooey Deschanel's character all of a sudden.
Oh, I'll tell you what she was doing. She was playing ukulele.
What's her name, though?
And eating soup. I don't know. I've never seen New Girl.
What?
Yeah, I do not care for sitcom comedies. I am very snobby about my comedies.
That is so snobby. Why wouldn't you? It's absolutely hysterical. What do you not like about sitcom comedies?
Yeah, canned laugh and
there's no audience.
Right, I know, but it's like that. Looks on the film with the like the bright, like How I Met Your Mother. Like, come on, I'm not going to watch that.
Wow, that's the literally in years of knowing you, this is the snobbiest thing you've ever said. And it's your loss because New Girl is hysterical, but she and I in my dream had gotten our plates mixed up.
She's just like eating soup and playing ukulele.
No, that's
in the
not
rain.
Her character at all.
Do, 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 do.
Oh yeah, you're really missing out because it is one of each of those characters in their own right is beyond funny. I watched the whole thing again in quarantine.
But then isn't it such a disappointment when you have... I've had the SNL dream so many times that I'm sitting in the audience of SNL. I feel it. The excitement's happening. I'm hearing the director call in. I hear the countdown, band start, the whole thing.
Really? You've had actual dreams about that at night, about being at SNL?
So that's the most common dream I have.
Do you remember your dreams all the time?
Listen, I need to preface something because I'm going to answer your question, but I need to tell you that another thing... I'm laughing because of what a horrible person I am in the first 3 minutes of the show. I am snobby about comedy and I don't care about people's dreams. And I am laughing because I want to answer questions and be a good friend. But also part of being a good friend is knowing that I routinely tell people that I love and that live in my house I'm good. I don't need to hear the fullness of the dream. It's just your subconscious running wild. Let's talk about things that are happening. And they rightly roll their eyes at me because I'm the worst.
Yeah,
I'm the
worst. Why do you feel that way? Why?
Because it's nothing. Dreams are nothing. People are going to go, not going to like that. But it's just like whatever little things are trickling around in your brain while you're not really thinking, just kind of firing together and making synapses. It's not like, I think every once in a while there's something, like if I start to have work dreams, I can tell, like it's a sign. I'm working too hard.
You may feel this way because you dream every night. Do you dream every night?
No.
Okay.
But I do dream in black and white and in French. What does that say about me?
You're lying.
I am lying. It's all like a noir film.
Okay. I cannot believe that you do that to those absolutely lovely children who live in your house, that you tell them you don't care about what they dreamed.
Yeah, and ones that I'm married to. They just know that I am a total grump about dreams. That being said,
I'll never bring it up again, but it did start now my morning started off double disappointing because I didn't know this was who you were. And I was hanging out with characters that I really like, that I think you would really like. And then I woke up and it's never going to happen. It's not possible. It's absolutely literally impossible.
But I had a real choice to make then and I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
Because it was like, do I be your actual person that you know or the person that does another 10 minutes on dreams? And I felt like I got to choose.
No.
You want to. Yes. What's going to happen is you are not going to realize that I'm choosing podcaster instead of actual friend. And then I'm going to talk to you again in a month and I'm going to have to sit here and listen to some insufferable subconscious thing that happened.
Sure. It won't happen in another month. Well, it'll never happen again, but it for sure won't happen in another month because I only remember my dreams once every 4 years. So you have nothing to worry about.
But see, that's the problem with me and that I don't want to happen is that I'm not saying I'm right. That's just how I am. I feel.
But me being a good friend back to you is not telling you about my dreams. Who cares? You're right. It is just a dream. It's not like an actual thing that matters to me.
But maybe me being a good friend is shutting my mouth and listening to your dream. Right?
You totally did.
It lasted for two minutes.
Have you never had any dreams that you felt like had spiritual significance?
Yeah. It wasn't super clear, like, there's the answer. But there's been, it feels like I woke up and there's a premonition of a thing happening.
Right,
something feels particularly more right or more wrong. I've never woken up and had like the lyrics to Yesterday and written them down or something like that. But I have had like, oh, I see. My whole being is moving towards something. And I just was able to name that something. And I don't think that that's my brain.
Cool.
Does that make sense? Like a big decision or something's wrong or something's right, or I realize something. So yes. So to that end, yes. And I guess people could give credit to themselves and say it's their own brain in the background working hard. But I do think there have been times where there's extra information that I would have had no idea of knowing that has been helpful. So that was a long drawn out answer. What about you?
Great. In my whole life, there've been three. And so that's the other thing with me and dreams is they are just so rare that I remember them. And for as rare as I remember them, they're times 11 more rare that they matter, you know? But I'm with you. I interrupted you earlier. You were saying that when work gets stressful, you dream a lot.
Well, yeah. And I'll continue working in the dream. So it's the most mundane junk where I'm writing my response or writing the copy for the whatever.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I'm not turning this off. And it happens rarely, but you know, everybody has seasons.
Yeah.
Where it's particularly busy. Do you remember? I'll ask a question that I don't know if you want to answer, but we can punt it away because we don't practice this. You said there were three.
Yeah.
That's a pretty definitive thing. Are you able to tell me any of those three?
Yeah, or is I'll tell you like all three of them. No, none of them. One of them was in college and I was trying to decide in my awake life, I was trying to decide what happened next. Like what happens after college? You know, it was my senior year. And I just had a really memorable dream about, I felt this real tension between my hometown and my college town. Mm-hmm. And I just had a dream that kind of felt like God was reminding me that I could live in both. Like he was telling me that everything isn't black and white, that some things can be both, you know, mm-hmm. when yeah. in my awake natural state at 20 years old, that was really hard for me to comprehend. I was I needed black or white in a lot of things because I am naturally more gray. I am naturally more, wait, let me hear you out. Let me hear both sides of this. Let me, I bet y'all both are bringing, like politically, it's hard for everybody. It's also hard for me in that I believe both sides have really valuable things to say and both sides do really stupid things. And so I'm very gray. Yeah. I'm not like all the way either side. So that's this long answer to that. So that's my natural tendency. So what I find with this particular dream is that the Lord needed to say something to me when my conscience wasn't available because of how black and white my conscience was trying to be about this one decision.
Yeah. 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 And that's kind of that is in a weird way kind of helpful, right? Because it sort of puts you, it's almost like exposure therapy for a second.
Uh-huh.
It's like, you can just go there for a second and feel it. You can wear, you can try that coat on. Oh, okay. I see how that feels. That's that's an option I can handle now.
Yep. Now, the funny thing is the other two dreams are about the exact same. Those two dreams are about the exact same thing. In the opposite way, in that in the maybe 2014 or 15, I wanted to quit this job. It was just hard. I was in a really hard season of this job and I had 4 books out and didn't have enough income to pay the bills. So I was like applying for my 4th book was out, Eddie, and I was applying for a job at the teacher parent store. I mean, it was
not really, that's bad, but that's a real disconnect between two
what people
worlds,
think.
Isn't it?
Yes. And that's such a disconnect between what you think happens when you're an author, right?
Oh,
you
yeah.
think her 4th book is out. She's probably buying a Mercedes. It's like, no, my 4th book was out and I couldn't pay my employee and was barely able to pay myself. And so I was having to get a supplemental job to pay my employee at my full-time job.
Yeah.
And pay myself. So I decided to quit doing this and I was going to go back to teaching school. And so I started researching teaching school and I didn't ask the Lord and I didn't pray about it. And I just was like, I'm going back to teaching. Like, I can't do this. And the first dream I had, I was in my, I used to teach elementary school. I taught 2 years of 5th grade and 3 years of 4th grade. And in the first dream, I was back in my 4th grade classroom and my planner was laid out on, this is so clear. It might've really happened, but it didn't. My planner is laying out on my desk and I'm looking down at all the things I have to do in the school week and all the things I have to do for my writing and speaking job. And I start to panic because I realize I can't do them both and I've made the wrong choice. And so I run down to the principal's office and tell her, I just can't. I'm so sorry. I know the school year's about to start, but I can't. And then I woke up and I was like, oh man, that feels like the Lord telling me that I'm not supposed to do this. And about a week later, I had a real disappointment professionally. And so I decided to quit again. And that night I dreamed that I was back in that classroom and my teaching contract was on my desk. And this is kind of gross. As I was signing it, I threw up on it.
Oh.
And I woke up and I was like, okay, Lord, you've told me twice that I'm supposed to trust you and that I'm not supposed to run back to what feels safe and what feels easy and what is steady income. And so I will trust you. So those are the three that I like really remember. But you'd remember if you threw up on a teaching contract, you know?
Yeah, in dream or in real life. That's not a moment you forget. Uh-huh.
Isn't that wild though?
That
2
is.
Weeks in a row to dream the exact same thing that I tried to go back to my job that I loved and still love and feel safe in financially. And both times it was just so clear that I wasn't supposed to do that yet.
I have a question that it seems like I'm just pandering to you and all the things you care about, but I actually wonder about
right.
This.
That is 3 dreams that you don't want to hear about dreams at all. Sorry.
I don't. Yeah. Cause it's interesting. I do
but
wonder
you
though.
Ask, were you just being nice?
No, I wasn't. I mean, I think we know by now I was not being nice, but it was just such an odd, not odd, but specific point that there were 3. Cause I'm like, I remember generally some things, but you had like moments.
Yeah.
But So the question I have, I wonder if Enneagram type people have different relationships with dreaming, because part of me thinks that I don't dream a lot because I generally process all of the stuff inside, out loud, in my head, constantly, all day long, comfortable sitting in it because of the nature of who I am. Like when I finally go to bed, finally, but being the operative word, like sometimes I have a really hard time falling asleep if there's still too much brewing. But if I can finally get myself to bed, there's usually very little there. And I sleep through
really
the night.
That's really interesting. Because, you know, the opposite is sevens. I mean, if I put my head near a pillow, I'm asleep because it's a way to escape.
Right. And so then I wonder if your brain is still working hard on these concepts or working hard on, because, I mean, it's not hard to dissect the New Girl dream, right? I mean, what it means.
Like, which is kinda, what? Literally nothing?
No. It's, sorry I said that so.
Yeah, I'm like, what does it mean?
You miss friends and community and being around people. You've stopped watching as much TV.
Yeah.
So those two things crash together in, I think, in you like having a dream that you're literally in this in new with the New Girl cast.
Yeah.
So
that's a very likely possibility. I hadn't even thought of either of those things. I just thought how fun it was.
And that's the thing is I would think of all day long all of the things that are wrong and how I'm processing and how I miss. And so by the time I go to bed, I'm done churning on my feelings.
Sure.
And you go right to sleep, but there's still churning left to do.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think that probably makes a ton of sense.
This may not be a good theory, and it may not hold water, but I'm curious if it... There's got to be somebody smart that's written about that. With everything that's Enneagrammed about these days, somebody has to have written about that.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a ton of sense because I know a lot of people with my personality type, whether it's Enneagram or Strength Finders or whatever. I know a lot of people with my personality type who use sleep as an escape and who, when they're stressed, they fall asleep. When they're sad, they fall asleep. Like not in a narcoleptic way, but in like a literal, like not cry yourself to sleep way, but I will lie down and be crying and be asleep.
Oh, what an unbelievable,
what a gift.
Yeah. But just such a different, people are such the, it's one species, but really realized a lot of different ways. I just can't fathom that. Just because sleep is absolutely the first thing to go with me. Even if I don't know something's wrong, when I stop sleeping, something's wrong. Something's happening.
Fascinating.
And I'm going to bed real late.
It's because your brain is working the whole time?
I guess. And sometimes I don't even feel it. So sometimes it's just seasons of like if the anxiety, depression clouds are rolling in and I haven't been able to name it yet. Sometimes and it doesn't happen often, but like one and a half times a year, there's a brush of it. Sometimes there's just something brewing that I'm telling myself, oh, it's not a huge decision. We'll get to it. But it's actually, but I don't know what it is, but that's the first to go. And so it's a helpful thing because I know when I'm not sleeping, there's something and it's leading to the series of additional things that will then begin to cry out, you're not okay right now. Help find solutions. Time to get to work.
Do you know what's funny? When I can't stay awake is when I know something's wrong. When I like need a nap every day, when I can't get up regularly in the mornings, like it's actually been something I've noticed about myself the last couple of weeks where I'm like, man, I am not waking up as bouncy as I normally, like I normally, when my alarm goes off at 6, like my self-discipline and my like, this is your time to do what you want to do gets me up. And it has not been that way the last couple of weeks. And I've chalked it up to this, to like, oh, there must be something, you must be sadder than you realize or more something than you realize because you can't stop sleeping.
Man.
Weird, right?
It is so weird. It's also weird how long you can know a person, how much we've talked, and we just, there's a whole brand new world about each other that seems like a pretty major thing.
Yeah.
Sleep health.
What's Bree's sleep like? And what's her, I don't know what she identifies as Enneagram-wise.
Well, we would probably need to ask her all of those things. You can ask her all that stuff because I always feel weird about fully sharing about all of her world. But I will say that I am a much more finicky sleeper and look up to really everyone in my house and their ability to sleep, including, and I mean this respectfully, the dog.
Yeah, that's why I was wondering. Yeah, I don't need, that's kind of you to not tell Bree's story. I just was, my thought was, are you both sitting up in the middle of the night being like, we don't sleep well, or are you like,
oh no,
yeah,
it's me and the Larry Sanders Show in the middle of the night.
Wait, Larry Sanders Show is a stand up. What's it called?
Not a sitcom, Annie. Right now, here's what just happened. You just brought your basketball in and you just realized that you're playing against LeBron and you didn't even know it. So do you?
Oh my gosh.
I did it just to hear your disgust. So I very rarely hear your pure, just your pure disgust.
Wait, if I understand the Larry Sanders Show, as I remember it, it is, but he does talk to the camera, doesn't he?
It's many formats within itself. It's a multi-camera show when they're behind the scenes filmed, and it is a two-camera late night show, or sometimes three cameras depending on when they're doing the late night show, and they intercut them with each other. Mm-hmm. It is also the best it launched the comedy writing of basically everybody that writes anything significant right now.
Sure.
Mainly young Judd Apatow in his I think first or second writing job. And Gary Shandling, who is my all-time favorite writer.
Why haven't you written more public comedy? I just feel like the world is missing out. With as much as you know and as much as you've studied and as much as you watch comedy, why are you not writing it for us?
I appreciate you saying that. I feel like I could, but I want to acknowledge that was a very nice thing of you to say.
Yeah, I mean it.
I love it. The reason is I'm not quite sure. I have a hard time writing just to put it into the ether. Like, I've submitted things to publications many times and have a script writing thing and want to write a script. I have a hard time just doing it unless there's a thing attached to it. I work really well on deadlines.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Sure.
And I'm like, what am I going to do? Just like start a blog and be like, here's a sketch that you can read? That to me, I realize some people be like, yeah, that's a good idea. To me, that feels wholly uninteresting.
You only want to write if people are going to read it?
Yeah.
Not
to be famous, but because there's the feedback to it, there's the performance aspect of it. I can make myself laugh all day long about things, but there's the, like, I will do stand-up comedy when the world reopens.
Really?
That was the second 2020 goal.
I remember us talking about that, but I didn't realize you were so like, yes, I will.
Well, when 2020 hit, we didn't know 2020 was going to be 2020. In January, it was just 2020. Mm-hmm. And I was staring down 40, and I've talked about this briefly, but the media version of it was, I didn't have a New Year's resolution, but it was like, okay, I turned 40 this year. How's it been the first 40 years? I felt really proud of some stuff that had happened and just the general things of being able to navigate, you know, leaving home and being a parent and being a husband and all of those kinds of things. I was like, that was a good 40 years.
You launched well.
Yeah. And I felt like, okay, what's this year and what's the next 40? And so I had some big goals for that. And they're all really like anybody would guess them, like continue to parent well, like try to help out in the world and stuff like that's just like big stuff.
Sure.
But also specifically, it was like, I have got to conquer or figure out this health thing a little bit more because that's just not working. What I'm doing now is not working and I'm not a healthy person. And I really want to be able to handle this in a way that isn't some sort of like crash diet that's set up for failure. I really want to understand what health could mean for me. That was the first one. And the second one is I've got to do something in comedy without any delusion that Conan is going to ask me to write on a show. It's not that kind of thing. I need to express this somehow. And to me, stand-up is the first step for that.
Yeah.
Because I need to get on stage. I need to hear the people not laugh. Because this is such, you and I together on this show, it's so easy to do this well because I have you, who is a professional podcaster, and an incredibly kind, warmed up, ready to go podcast listener.
Audience. Yeah.
That's so easy because I know and have been podcasting in the space that they've been listening to for a decade almost. Like this is, I need to get in front of an unfriendly crowd and understand what it's like. Cause I think, so all of that was, then we got locked down and I was like, okay, well, here we are. But when we're unlocked, I'm going to do some open mic up here and open mic wherever we end up moving. And see how that first expression leads. And I bet that that will lead to additional expressions of, you know, sending in spec scripts and trying to do stuff. Because it really is, comedy is really important to me.
Yes. Oh.
Really deeply important. And I'm more than just a fan. Like, it's very, very important to me.
Yes. We all know.
I know. I know you know.
The way you talk about New Girl, the disgust with which you talk about New Girl is proof that comedy matters. But you're really missing out on Schmidt. He's the funniest character. Eddie, do you know that I actually, on Wednesday night, I went to a stand-up show?
I saw a picture of it and would like to hear more.
I have loved Trey Kennedy as from a distance for a long time. We became friends about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. And I adore him up close. He's an even better human up close as a person. Like, he's just a, he's a great human. You would love him. He loves to read. He's thoughtful. I mean, I just could not think more highly of him.
I don't really care about any of that. I know that he is a comedian. And I would freeze up fully around him and am in love with him.
Yes. Great. So let me tell you about the scenario, though. The scenario is we're in the middle of a pandemic. And people cannot be gathered. So he did a live stream event, like a live stream comedy show, like a stand-up show. Yes. And but there were like 20 of us that he did. He filmed it here in Nashville. And so I texted him and I was like, wait, I saw that he was filming it in Nashville. I was like, wait, I want to come. And he was like, OK. And so my friend Sarah and I went last night and had to wear masks the whole time, social distance. So I need you to know that this kid, he's not a kid, he's a man. This man and the guy who opened for him, they did stand-up comedy to 20 people in a room spread out in groups of two with whoever you came with masks on. Can you imagine a harder crowd?
I can't. And that's how you know they're good because they are just, because I will tell you, you don't even have to tell me, they killed it, didn't they?
Yeah, they killed it.
They
absolutely were both
burned
great.
The place down.
Yeah.
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 They can't, because they know that, because you can walk into a room of two people or you can walk into an arena and you're going to kill it.
Yes.
That's how good Trey is. He's not
so
going to
good.
Fail.
And it was very, it was live streamed to like thousands of people. And they knew that. So they knew on the other side there were thousands of people. But in the room with masks on and social distanced, I mean, the emotional energy afterwards, I was like, Trey, I am more impressed with you than I've ever been, because the emotional energy to entertain 25 people spread across a room where you cannot see their faces is so extraordinary. And it was brilliant. It was hysterical.
Oh, yes.
I don't go to stand up very much. I only go if it's one of my people, really. I don't go watch it just for fun. I just go watch it if one of my friends is doing a show. But I can totally see how the art that it takes to be a good stand up. It's an art.
Right. And it's just like anybody. I don't appreciate painting like I should, but there are people that do. And you know that they know a thing that you don't know, that I don't know.
Well, I think you do appreciate it far better than I do. You have, because you study it. I mean, that's why I think you should be writing it, is you know it as well as anyone I've ever met.
Oh, like stand up and just comedy in general.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's but I think it takes that appreciation. It takes a million hours of podcasting or you can just have, part of it is you don't want to learn how the sausage is made. Part of me just likes that you go and you're like, that made me laugh. And it was pure. You're not dissecting. Are they kind of pulling from the whatever school of, or interesting that they would open with that, or that was kind of a hacky move to get a laugh. You don't have to do any of that stuff. You can still just like comedy. But I think that's awesome. And also I got to say, you're the person, you specifically, Annie F. Downs, are the person, if a comedian is going to fill a room with 20 people and try to pull some energy from those 25 people that are spread apart, you're one of the 25, you're one in the room, because you have a generous laugh that is heard. You don't want me in a room, because when I hear a great joke, I know I don't laugh at all.
Yes.
Like a shockingly good joke, I just lean back and go, there it is. That is it.
Yes.
And it's
a lot of people heard my laugh on the live stream. It was I got tagged a lot after the show on Wednesday night.
Annie, that is the best.
people are like, do I hear Annie F. Downs in the back of Trey Kennedy's live stream? Is that Annie F. Downs' laugh? I was like,
yeah.
I also was, because I'm Annie F. Downs, and a lot of the people in the room were fans of his, like huge fans of his. I am too, but I'm also a friend. We were trying to sit kind of far back so that the chairs came in pairs. And so my friend Sarah and I were like, we'll just sit back here because I'm just here to cheer for my buddy. You know, I want the people mm-hmm. who like are huge, huge fans. And this is a moment for them. I want them to be up there, you know? And, and then they moved us one section and put me right by one of the microphones that.
Yes.
And I was like,
they know what they're doing.
Yeah. I was like, this is going to be loud. I couldn't help it. He was so funny. he had some great stuff.
But also you're a great, I mean, I got to tell you, one of the primary reasons that I like getting to do this show with you is because if I can really get a good one out, if I can sneak in a thing, especially, you know, my favorite version of you laughing is because there's different versions of it.
Yeah.
It's shocked, surprised I said it and understand the joke all in a second. Uh-huh. And so I won't do the impression, but it is just sort of like a, oh, and then a hard laugh. So you gulp in the surprise and then you just
first.
Right. But then you can't deny yourself the fact that you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
That's my favorite
her.
One.
Yeah, I know her.
That's my favorite. Right. But I have to try not to do that too much because, you know, there are other people listening.
You do get that one, though. That's true.
Every once in a while.
Man, when you do a stand up show, are you going to let us? Can people like, are we going to be able to watch it? No.
Yeah, I think at first I will need to do this alone.
Sure.
Because I don't want to stock the pond with my own people.
Crowd, sure. Like, do you know my buddy Luke Norsworthy? He does stand up. He's a pastor who does stand up. Yeah, y'all might enjoy being friends. Yeah. He does stand up.
That's cool.
I know. And it's funny to watch the videos because you're like, oh, that people did not laugh at that.
Yeah. I have felt too much easy success with comedy. And the one thing that I know from every stand-up comedian that I've ever listened to, and I've listened to, people don't need to make suggestions on Twitter. I have watched it all and heard all of it in every podcast and every little random YouTube interview. Yeah. And to a person, they all say the most formative thing is the bombing, is walking in and having to hold your own microphone and amplifier set in the middle of a roller skating rink where the roller skating is happening and they're paying you $20 to do a 15 minute set.
Yeah.
And no one's paying attention. Like, you have to do that to be John Mulaney walking into, not Carnegie Hall. What's the other one? What's the the Rockefeller Center.
Yeah.
No,
you're thinking, they're yelling.
It's next to Rockefeller Center.
Not Carnegie.
Live at, it's a thing he just did. It's the big John Mulaney live at. Mm-hmm. Oh man, why did I do this to us? I'm sorry.
This is stage math. Google it.
I know.
While you're doing that, I'll tell you that I saw another comedian friend of mine, and a couple of days ago, and I said to him, "Are you listening to Mike Birbiglia's new podcast?"
Oh yes, what a joy!
So
that
good.
Is.
Are you listening to Nate Bergazzi's podcast yet? I haven't started listening to it yet, but everybody.
Oh
loves
no,
it.
I will, though. Yeah. I love Nate. I kind of save him because he's so precious to me.
Oh, really?
Not him. Not like.
Yeah, but like his Radio art. City you don't, Radio City Music Hall. There it is.
It's like I slowly read Hemingway because there's an end to it, and I don't want to read all of it. I want to always have a little bit more. So I slowly through my life will listen to it.
Yeah.
Because I want to save it. That's how I feel about Nate Bergazzi. I don't know if he's my favorite, but his last special, his Netflix special, it was
the one about the horse in the hospital.
It took my breath away.
My gosh,
it was so
hysterical.
Magically hard to do.
Yeah.
And so effortless. And he's a whole different thing. You know, I got to interview him one time. I talked to him.
Yes.
Froze. I mean, dripping sweat, frozen.
Oh. What'd you interview him for? I did know you talked to him, but I don't remember what for.
It was just like he was doing the rounds of a thing.
And he was on New Activist?
No, relevant.
Oh.
Can you imagine?
I was like, wow, he was on New Activist?
I sometimes think I set up the New Activist to be a safeguard for myself, not just interviewing comedians. Like,
why don't
I
you do a show where you just interview comedians?
Greenlit.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah.
Why not?
I would love it. I would love it. It was like the Judd Apatow book when he was in high school.
I don't know.
He wrote a book about it, and you should, and I say that respectfully, read Judd's book. It is very funny. I think he's only got one out. Well, he's got two out. He put out a Gary Shandling book, but the one before it, where when he was a kid in high school, he was such a fan of comedy, never thought he'd do it. He was just such a fan of comedy that he lived, I think it was like New Jersey, New York, somewhere where he had access, that he would reach out to Seinfeld, Leno, big comedians at the time that even at the time weren't like undiscovered. We're talking like big, big comedians, and say, I'm writing for my high school newspaper. Can I interview you? Then they would say, sure. And he would meet them back of a club, you know, before they go on, interview them for an hour. Punchline, the school, he never wrote for the school newspaper. He was just lying. All he wanted to do was spend time with these people, but he had hours and hours and hours of just gold recordings. Yeah. And then he compiled them all and put them in a book. And it's just this incredible book with basically Seinfeld giving advice and Leno giving advice and Carlin and all of the just greatest comedians giving young Judd Apatow advice. And then, you know, the second punchline is Judd becomes who he becomes. But I don't know why I started talking about that, but that is a great.
That you're going to make a new podcast.
I'm just going to lie and just be like, hey, I'm on coming. This is Eddie calling from Gimlet Media. We are launching a new show called Eddie Chats with Funny People. Anyway,
live it up. Enjoy.
Want to do two hours and then like be really good friends and text and stuff like that. And then I'll send you a spec script that I'm thinking about writing for BoJack Horseman. And anyhow, okay, cool.
Oh, wow. That is deep dive. all right. We really did it this morning. What a way to lead people to the weekend.
How do we possibly title this show? We can talk about it off the air, but I love it.
Yeah. All right, friends. Have a great weekend. Please wash your hands, and we'll see you back here on Tuesday.
Bye, buddies.